an iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving higher.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 193. This edition of the Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by Dawson Tire and Wheel, your premier ag tire and wheel provider in North America, helping people grow. Tractor Zoom delivering insights, and Dry Shod Boots, the official work boot of the Moving Iron Podcast. Well, this week I have got my good friend Aaron Findle back here with us. And Aaron, believe it or not, this is not Moving Iron Podcast number 193. It's actually Moving Iron Podcast number 503. So that's
503.
503 of these things have been put in the book. So
booyah.
That's a lot. It's a fair amount. There's a quite a bit of stuff going on. We're at the end of the year here. We are recording this on October 15th, 2020. So we are in that last quarter of the year push as we start heading into the first of the year. And with the way harvest is going right now, if you take a look at all the stuff that's happening, there is more than enough time for guys to stop and think about what they've got to do for the rest of the year after they talk to their accountants and count all the bushels they've got, because for the most part, our guys are going to be done like in a week, it feels like. There's still some sugar beets that are going to be getting dug and those kind of things, but for the most part, corn harvest is at the very tail end of everything awesome happening there. So what are your thoughts on that? I kind of step back and take a look at that. Guys, we're going to have a pretty big, I think we're going to have a busier than normal November, because typically in November and December this year, in the past 5 years have been like, okay, so we're done with harvest. It's December 28th and we need to make some decisions now. And so what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with that. I mean, typically within our country, mm-hmm. our AOR, we don't even think about corn until November 1st.
Right. Yeah.
Especially for the guys that have beets, which is the majority, you know, around our Alliance, Bridgeport, Scotts Bluff, Fort Morgan, Sterling, you know, those yeah. kind of stores. And there are some large operations that are going to be done with everything November 1st.
Yeah.
That's unheard of out yeah. here. Of course, 80 in October is fantastic corn picking yeah. weather.
Yeah.
We had that early freeze that kind of sped things up for us too.
And yep.
I mean, it's been a perfect harvest year. The drawback to that is it is so god awful dry everywhere. It's mm-hmm. it's a nightmare. It sucks to be a grass hay guy, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Back to your first question, you know, about guys wrapping up and counting their bushels and how should they go about it. That can be quite simply answered with one statement. They should just call Aaron and buy some machinery. Yeah. I don't know how else to slice it. That's pretty cut and dried.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah. you know, I do agree with you. I know, you know, being on the ag Twitter so much, there is a lot of, I don't know of anybody who's not ahead of schedule.
Right.
Those poor guys in Iowa that got the, how do you say that? Drecho?
Something.
The fancy name for wind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those guys have got some slow going because they got to digest everything above the dirt to get any of that, if they're picking it. Right. You know, as we've seen, a lot of guys dist her up and
color good.
Yeah. Color good. We'll worry about volunteer corn next year.
Right.
So I mean it's a little bit of everything. I think the end of the year stuff, I would venture there's a lot of years you're really at the hottest. I wanna say we'll call it the 20th to the 30th, 5 days each side of Christmas.
Right.
That always feels real hot and heavy. I think this year, by the 15th of December, a lot of that'll probably be largely wrapped up.
Yep.
Also, it could be the complete opposite, because they will have more time to count and think and look. And it could be vice versa. It could be shopping palooza until the 28th, 27th, and just boom, boom, boom. You know, 3 or 4 days of fury. Could go either way. Could be both. Let's hope for both.
Right. Let's hope for a happy medium in there somewhere. Now, I'm with you. I think I'd look at what's going on here, and I think the month of November, towards the tail end of November, will be busier and bleed over into December.
Yeah.
And I really think, my personal opinion, that guys are going to have purchased what they're going to purchase by the 20th of December. And I think they're going to have that last stint, barring any guy hanging out in what mail for that late December auction or something like that, where they're going to watch whatever it is go across the block and make that decision then. But I really feel like it's going to be a fair amount of their decisions are be made by mid, 15th December, 20th December, and that last week of December, in my opinion, barring something crazy happening where all of a sudden, oh crap, corn jumped up to 450 cash corn all of a sudden, now everyone's like, oh yeah, now we're going to make some stuff happen. But most of that will get carried over into 21 at that point. Yeah.
Kind of like the spike in beans.
Exactly, yeah.
So many guys are like, yeah, that's great. I'm hauling my $9 beans to town. But they made that move because that eliminated their risk.
Right. So as you look
there
at
that. Now, real quick, you almost said, as guys were going to watch auctions and stuff, watch it go across the block. I feel like you almost said watch it go across the scale, which would be accurate if we're talking certain machines,
exactly.
Which we promised ourselves we were not going to discuss talk
about
today.
Them. Not going to talk about them.
No.
All right, so guys you've been talking to, all of the action that you see happen right now, what is the primary, like what are the top three machines classes that you're talking to guys about now? Is it high horsepower row crops? Is it four-wheel drives? Is it combines? Placing heads, tillage pieces, like what sprayers, planters, what's on the block? What are you guys seeing right now?
Top three would be 8Rs, always.
Right.
That's number one. Number two would be, I would say probably, I'm just going to say track tractors, 8s and 9s. Okay. And then number three would be planters.
Planters. Okay, so let's talk about the track tractor market for a little bit. That is a market that has, in my opinion, really taken off in the last 12 months, more than we've seen it in the past. And there's a million reasons for it. There's horsepower to the ground and all these different arguments that you see happening. I think the biggest driving factor in the explosion of the popularity of tracks is the fact that, oh, crap, it costs me as much or more to put 8 tires on a 4-wheel drive now as it does for me to buy a set of tracks and update the undercarriage on my 500 horsepower track machine. And now, by the way, I get more power to the ground. Oh, and by the way, I get this, that, and the other thing that come along with having all less compaction and all those kind of things. What are your thoughts?
I hate to admit this, but you really hit the nail on the head.
Why would you hate to admit that?
Well, because I don't think you need any more pats on the back. Your shoulder hurts from doing it yourself, so I don't want to pile on. You're exactly right, though. If you look back to the 55 Cat, the 8400T Deer, they were kind of there's guys that jumped on, and they haven't had a tire since. There's a lot of guys, though, that got them. Because, you got your cool factor.
Right.
Forever exists in machinery. Plus, you got your, we can go across rows, and we can kind of do this and do that. Boy, they suck on the road, Yeah. So, you had your biggest group that was the middle of the road guys that, we'll get one and kind of try it. Everybody had a 8,000, an 8,000 aught T or a 35, 45, 55 Cat.
Right.
Or an 8010T.
Right.
By the time, and then Caterpillar came out with the MTs, and ooh.
No, it wasn't Caterpillar. That was AGCO.
I thought Caterpillar came out with MTAs.
They sort of.
Caterpillar, it was Caterpillar's brain.
Yeah, but AGCO built the MT.
Okay. So that was made it. All MTs were made in Jackson.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, it was still Caterpillar's brains that built that. Let's be real. But the MTs came along, and those dedicated track guys were like, oh, shit, that's nice.
Right.
Fast forward to the 8RT, whole different.
Oh, yeah.
Whole different world, different buyers, different everything. Some of those guys, a lot of guys, stayed 8RT. Some guys are like, wow, that is so much better, but I'm just an ILS front dual guy. I've talked with quite a few guys through the year, and they're like, well, you know, and they're what I would call, they haven't had a track. Mm-hmm. They're probably like a large B,
right?
You know, by dealership speak. And these guys, they've never had one, or they were one of the ones that have flirted with the aught and the 10 and the 20. And those guys, you know, that's one of the questions you get. Well, what about maintenance? You know, what about tracks? And I've always told guys, I said, if you look at doing all six, you know, say you got a, you know, 50s on the back, 420, 34s on the front, just a regular 8R. Tracks and those six tires, pretty much dead heat. By the time that you get front duals, it's cheaper to do two tracks than all eight tires.
Right.
And then you have guys that say, well, yeah, but then you got your drives and your idlers and your bogies, and, well, that's fine. You got front end seals and ILS, you know, all that, accumulators, all that, everything on that other tractor. The track, long run, is going to be less maintenance.
Right.
Typically, not always.
Typically, yes. Yes.
So that's a big part of it too. Plus now they zip down the road better. They're still a track tractor as far as ride, but you go drive an 8430T and then go drive an 8295RT, no comparison, man.
Right. Yeah. They've done a lot in suspension, you know, independent bogey wheel suspension and all those kind of things. Back in my cat days when I used to love doing it at the dealership in the lot, there was a little little lip, you know. I'd drive over this little thing, and that was my favorite thing to do. But because it was like driving a tank. What I could imagine driving a tank was. I mean, you just drive up, and then you get to the point where it teeters, and it falls forward. You know, that's how it was. And now, when I would take a guy and I would show him, like, okay, so here's how the 65C is, you know, or an E or whatever it was I had, and go, and then this is the MT. And you go drive it up there, and you drive that thing, and drive a. And then you take the MT and you drive it up, and it kind of somewhat molds to the hill, and it kind of comes over. So over the years, track suspension and the way things ride and all those different aspects of it have made an incredible dent in the overall performance of the machine, right? Now, one thing about track machines, too, is they're infinitely easier to auto-track.
Oh, yeah.
Because they can – it's just – you have a set on each side, and it's just – simple turn either way. You don't have to worry about front tires turning or anything like that. It's just straight and narrow. So that comes there. So while we're on the track side of it.
Real quick, just to piggyback onto that to give you an idea. When I came to the green side in 08, it took, say the tractor's already green star ready, and you just put a valve in it. You're probably looking at $5,000-$6,000,
right?
Or if you had an 8410T, it was like $800 for a chip in the steering block, and auto track. Right. Like, wow, that was a difference.
Yeah, that whole steering valve kind of progression into the light bar and the all that stuff, easy steer and all those kind of things.
Outback.
Remember the Outback. They had to run there for a minute. They were kind of the cat's meow for a while.
They were.
You know?
They were.
All those things were. Like easy steer with the the wheel.
Oh, there's a lot of that out there yet.
Yeah.
Just because it's such a cost effective, probably the way I want to put it. It's a great cost. Doesn't work for shit on RTK, but if you're anything other than RTK, it's right. great.
Yeah.
You can throw it in a 1086 binder, you right. know?
Yep.
It goes in anything.
I remember when Outback came out, it was like the bolt on system that didn't require anything. It was like just like you put it in there and you just kind of make it work.
Right. Right.
There was no like real like formula that you had to go do, and it's just like you put it on there and it just goes.
Yeah. Well, and what was cool when Outback first came out is they were like light bar on steroids. Because exactly. there was yes. light bars, and they were literally just that little black bar, yeah. and oh, try to get the middle dot. Whereas the Outback had those curved lights, and then your yeah. lights up and down in the middle, so you could really tell where the hell you were at. You right. get all them lit up in the middle, and oh man, you know, that was yeah. space age.
Yeah, that was... That was cutting edge for a minute,
and then yep.
just like everything else, technology wise, it just kind of comes and goes. So.
Oh yeah,
but yeah. So all right. So now let's talk about how many conversations you have in guys with either an IH quad track or a 9RX or 8RX or those kind of things. How much of those conversations are you having?
A little bit. I don't feel like there's a lot of, I know what happens because you see it. I don't feel like there's a lot of color switch on four-wheel drive, on four-track four-wheel drives. I'll leave it at that. I don't feel like there's a lot of, well, we got this one and let's try that one and, you know, back and forth. I feel like, you know, the red guys like the red, the green guys like the green, and
right.
I know of some green guys that did have the red and got the green and stayed green.
Right.
I just haven't had, I guess, a lot of conversations on four-track anything. Obviously, the 8RX, you know, guys have demoed it, which shocks me. I have not had anybody say that, oh, my God, that's a game changer. Everybody just adores that. That's done demos, you know, whether they're in, you know, Black Lands of Texas, North Dakota, Ohio, Washington State. They love it.
Right.
It's just amazing. Unfortunately, it's half a million dollar tractor. But,
you know. So is everything else.
Yeah. You know, at some point,
yeah.
that, I shouldn't say doesn't matter, but at some point, that's a it. You look at it from a way different angle than just here's what that tractor costs.
Yeah.
You know, it's efficiency, it's uptime, it's ride, it's everything.
Yep. Now I think
it's probably the most versatile tractor on the market, hands down.
Oh, I totally agree with that. But if you take a look at what the overall everything is getting expensive. So now you start looking at payment structures and you start looking at how things are going to play into your operation, and it's not $500,000 tractor. It's a X number dollar planner or X number dollar payment that year, and then I'm going to make that payment working in my operation. Kind of like we've talked about in the past. I brought up, you know, that whole construction thing that a guy's doing a job, and that machine's freaking into that job, and so on and so forth. Around you go. Guys can argue that, well, that's different because they're getting paid, you know, whatever. Well, you got to also remember that most of the time that road you're driving on, the bridge that you're going across, or the building that you're looking at, or whatever it is, the lowest bidder is the one building that. So, I mean, right, you know yeah. what I mean? I mean, it's
so comforting.
It's one of those things where you've got people that are their margins are thin, and they're working those ways through, and they're doing what they have to do and looking at the way they look. But it all comes down to what it is that you're doing, operational size, those kind of things, how all these different pieces of equipment, age, years, whatever it is, all play into that scenario, whatever that looks like, right? Obviously, you're going to have opportunities based on your economies of scale and what that looks like in your thing. So the way I look at it is, guys are looking at each machine as of, I can afford this amount of dollars for equipment, maintenance, and everything else per acre or per bushel or per whatever it is. And I feel like most guys know that, and they're working that math problem out to say, like, okay, so I can afford this.
Right. And a lot, I think a lot of guys, at least guys I talk to, more often than not, it's always cost per acre.
Yeah. That's what it comes down to, right?
Because I've had guys reach out to me that are like, hey, this is what we're doing now. It's fine. And they're picking up like two quarters. And he's like, I got to trade tractors to make that work.
Right.
Or trade combines to make those two quarters work. It's not a huge thing, but it is going to push us enough that we need to bump.
Right.
You know, one thing I'm glad you touched on, and that's a tremendous, I shouldn't call it a disconnect, but two completely different viewpoints of looking at the same thing, iron. Mm-hmm. Construction guys, it is.
It's a widget.
Yeah, it's, I'm going to use that D8H for this, cost me this, that's it, end of discussion.
Right.
This guy's looking at a 9620RX, and wow, that's how much, and man, that's the payment and all of that, and if they're not looking at it from that cost per acre, or even if they are, and it's, man, that's so big, well, they're just looking at that. They're not looking at productivity and, you know,
right,
the feature benefit side. It becomes price only and then, you know, kind of falls away. In the construction world, it's way more of a, this is a piece of iron to do a job.
Right.
I don't care if it's Deere, Komatsu, Cat, whatever.
Right.
You don't have that in my ag world.
Right.
If you do, it is a tiny percentage.
Yep.
Well, we're only going to buy green. We're only going to buy red, you know. And as soon as that thing hits the farm, I'm trying to think of the right word. It's not a love affair with it, but emotional, it's an emotional attachment.
Yeah.
Yep. It's part of the family.
Right.
The yellow is a tool. It's a pair of pliers. The green, red, silver, whatever, black with red wheels, whatever it is, it's part of the family.
Right.
You know, and that's, it's so different. But I think as far as farms getting bigger, and I hate the term mega farm, but large farms where, you know, it's XYZ farms and Mr. XYZ isn't necessarily the guy in the seat. Once you get to that point, I think you see more of that, though.
Well, yeah. You see a lot more guys measuring what it is that they're getting for their dollars, right? So that's when you start looking at what's the technology look like? What's the efficiency of the machine looks like? What's the serviceability of this machine look like?
Yeah.
How far do I have to go to get parts? Where's the guy coming from that's going to service my equipment?
And that's the biggest thing. You know, I've seen guys with the...
Or gal. Guy or gal.
Guy or gal. I've seen people.
Yeah.
I've seen ag producers. How about that?
Yeah.
I've seen ag producers with, you know, the new Lexions that are out, the 8800 or the X9.
Right.
And, oh, man, it'll do, you know, it'll do so much. It'll do so much. And other guys going, maybe this guy's right next door to a Lexion, and he loves the X9, but that dealer's 30-40 miles away.
Right.
So he's going to go Lexion.
Right.
You know, these guys have, they demoed an 8700 and loved it, but they're going to stay with a S790 because the dealer's 5 miles away.
Right.
I feel like that has happened a lot more in agriculture than it ever used to. People being more conscious of serviceability, having a bigger impact than color or love, you know.
I also think now you're starting to see, again, back to the construction model, which we see happening. It's just the morphing of this kind of model and the way it looks. There are more and more dealerships now, ag dealerships, that are looking at field service and how they're setting up their trucks now to be, you know what, we can kind of do whatever we want out here. And one, by the way, Mr. Customer, your shop is probably nicer than ours. So we can do your PSP in your shop. We can do we can pull that engine in. You know, there's a lot of those things that are happening right now, and you're starting to see that facet of the business start to grow.
Oh yeah, if a dealer, you don't see a dealer whose main ass kicking service truck is a dually anymore.
No,
or a 3/4-ton pickup.
No,
you know, it's a freaking class 8 straight truck with a service body and a big ass crane, or at the very least, it's a, you know, a 5500 Dodge, a 550 Ford, a 5500 Kodiak Chevy,
right?
You know, those almost C65 Chevy trucks, you know, right. A 2.5-ton truck, that is like
commonplace,
run of the mill now.
Yeah.
And even 10 years ago, it was like, wow, they got one hell of a service truck. And now it's like, oh, we got to drive that old 55 on because the such and such has the Peterbilt pulling an engine on a combine at Joe Blow's place.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a whole different world. And I think real quick, as I said, you know, some of those bigger farms are going to that construction model when it comes to machinery utilization, purchasing, operating, all of that. I would say, you know, for sure I think it's growing a lot in like the over 10,000 market.
Oh yeah.
And I think within 5 years, it'll be the 5+, you know, it'll take the big guys to do it. And the big guys already start thinking that way. You know, they're the early adopters and all that typically. Once they do it and it works for them, the trickle down will be very fast.
Yeah. Well, you also got to think about too, the number of, as you start looking at the demographic of the American farmer, right? The number of guys that are 60 plus years old and don't have someone coming back to the farm.
Oh, it's a huge.
It's a huge number, right?
Huge.
So that next 5 years of consolidation, of on-farm consolidation, what that looks like is going to be like 1990 dealership consolidation.
Oh, you know? Yeah. And, yeah.
I mean, because you're going to start seeing some guys that were, there's just that amount of that amount of opportunity that's going to pop up in the next 5 years for growers is going to be very similar to what it was. Dealership consolidation in the early 2000s, late 90s, you know, mid 2000s, you know, as you start looking at
today.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the other side of it. I mean, just like the growth and change in the business and then how we make all of that come together and work, you know, as we morph into whatever it is we morph into. So I think there's.
Well, and I think even without that, you know, the guys that are just five. I just want to touch on this quick. What I was getting at is, you know, the 5,000 acre guys going to that in 5 years, that's just them by themselves.
Right.
I meant with that, we're both talking about the same thing, just different angles of it.
Yep.
Yeah. Where even, you know, 10 years from now, the guy that's 3,000 acres is, well, do that and that and that and. They're going to be X amount, and they're gone. And then we do that again, X amount, gone, and just on down the road. And not having to do a multi-unit or anything like that, they might have 8370R that when it hits these hours, my cost per acre has now hit that. It's gone.
Right.
New one. And then it's an 8R370, you know, and down. Not every piece all together and make a multi-unit deal. Just everything is clockwork. Not the, well, we should trade, we'll wait till next year. There isn't that. It hits that, it's gone.
Yep.
It hits that, it's gone.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think there's more of that. You know, it has had this many bushels ran through it, or it's tilled this many acres, or it's planted this many acres, and my depreciation schedule, and da-da-da-da. Now, all of a sudden, I've hit this sweet spot where I've maximized my ability to get a return on this machine. Now, I'm going to go out and do it again.
Yep.
And that is getting to be, we start to see that now. Not that you didn't see it in the past, but now it's way more prevalent. The conversations I'm having with guys are way different than they were even 2 years ago. It's not economy related. It's here's how do I maximize my machine profitability in my field? Not efficiency, not this, not that, but when is the right time to make these things happen? And when do I pull these levers and not these levers over here? And those are all the conversations that we're having. And it's just the evolution of the business, evolution of the farmer, evolution of the overall, you know, economies of scale and how they all play into each other. And my economies of scale are different than your economy of scale. And there's things that play into that and how those all things look. So,
yeah, for instance, a guy that, you know, if he was a Missouri flood last year or a Northern Plains prevent plant, never could get to any of it. Like last December might have been his trade year.
Yeah.
But he didn't because he didn't do the hours. Mm-hmm. He didn't utilize, I mean, he made his payment. He paid it down with whatever funds he got for the situations. But he didn't trade because he has not, he didn't put any hours on it. Right. So his cost per hour per acre, which is how a lot of guys look at it, a combination of the two, and I'm not a mathematician. I can't explain any of that. But when you combine those two, that guy is just like, well, we're running with what we got next year because we didn't use it this year.
Right.
You know, other than the disc in August when they can finally get out there. And
right.
Yep. They want to plant wheat, so
right,
we'll hit her next year.
Yep. No, those are all things you play into. And then there's ways that you look at other things too. And I've had this conversation with guys before about, you know, when's the right time for me to buy that carryover machine, right? That new carryover, that new 20 or that new 19 when it's a 2020 model year, 2021 model year production schedule. And my response to them every time is, how long do you plan on keeping it and how many hours do you plan on running it through? And if they tell me they're going to do it less than 2 years, 2 years or less, I usually tell them it's not the best option for you. That, to my opinion, is that three-year deal when you have a three-year-old machine and you've got, you know, quote-unquote 2 years worth of average hours on it, that's when you start hitting that. That's when, I think, my opinion is when you hit that sweet spot of that machine.
Right. And when you're talking value, once you get to 3 years, 3 years, 4 years don't make a lot of difference.
Right. Yep.
Whereas if he does that in the first year or two, he made himself a 2 or 3 year old tractor when it was only 1 or 2.
Right. Now, the flip side of that is if you have that model year carryover and you're dealing with a larger producer and they have a whatever their discount structure looks like, that also weighs into that. Because then you start looking at, okay, here's what it costs me, here's what trade value is going to be and everything else. Does that discount structure offset whatever moving parts they have going on in their business at that point? Those discount structures are play a big factor into what that looks like. But if you're just buying a combine and you are looking to make a deal with someone on that, or a tractor or whatever it is, my personal opinion is if you can put a three-year-old machine and have 2 years worth of average hours, whatever that average hour is for your area, it varies from place to place to place to place, that's when you start hitting that sweet spot. And you got, especially if you have like in our area, if you have a three-year-old tractor that's got, you know, basically 500, 700 hours a year, what we put on a tractor, a row crop tractor, a full drive tractor. If you've got a three-year-old tractor that's only got 1,000 hours on it, not 1,500 or 750 or something like that, holy crap, all of a sudden someone's going like, oh, I want that one because it's got, you know, it's got low hours on it.
Right.
You know, and you put the same number of hours on it, you would traditionally. It's just the math works out. You're dividing by 3 instead of 2.
Yeah. The only time I completely agree with that, the only time I would say it's different, and it's a prevalent holdover market right now, planters. Year to year, I feel like means way less on planters.
Acres make way better.
It's just acres.
Right.
You know? Yep. So if it's you ordered a 21 in June or they had a new 19 sitting there, if it was me, I'd probably pick the 19.
Yeah.
You know? It's brand new. Right. It hasn't been in the field.
Yeah.
They both got 0 acres. They're both exact emerge. Then, yeah, save the money. And when that 21 gets traded off in 22 25, it's not going to make a lot of difference because it's acres.
So if you take that same 19, for example, and say you just go run it for 1 year and turn it in, and now you've got a 19 on it that's got, whatever, 7,500 acres on it or whatever the number is that you put on it, right? Somebody's going to look at that and be like, man, for 19, those discs look good.
Right.
Oh, man, those boots look great. You know, you start looking at all these different components that you think, well, it's a 19, it's 3 years old, man, it's going to need a lot of work. Oh, man, this thing's look almost brand new. Yep. It is. So that's my season.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, so those are all the different things you have going on there. So anyway. Well, I think we've kind of hit it here. Any last thoughts you want to throw out there?
Not that I can think of. I think we've exhausted it all.
Right on. Okay. Well, good deal. Well, Aaron, if folks want to reach out to you and pick your brain out what's going on in the marketplace or just get some of these smoking hot deals you got laying around, what's the best way to do that?
I am pretty active on Ag Twitter, and on Twitter I am at Aaron Fintel, or you can call me, text me, 308-760-1193.
Right on. And I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Make sure you check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's where you're going to find all the latest edition of the Moving Iron Podcast. Also, check out movingironllc.com for all the latest news about the Moving Iron Summit coming up in Nashville, Tennessee, January 20th through the 22nd. That will be open. Any dealer in North America that wants to attend that, hit me up, either Moving Iron Podcast at movingironpodcast.com or go through the website. There's a contact me page. You can fill out the information, and I will get back to you with all the information that's there about that great and wonderful event that we have every year. Also, check out the Global Ag Network and the great podcasters out there like the Dryline Farmer Podcast. Brent and Landon both will make you laugh while you're sitting in the combine or tractor, whatever it is that you're doing at the time. Great podcast to take a listen to. So with that, I am Casey Seymour with Aaron Fennell. Let's go with some iron, folks. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving iron.